CliffCentral.com.
And it is the burning platform. We did a burning platform like theme song.
There used to be one, like when the it used to go boom, like and then explodes, but then yeah.
Do you think
but
do
then
you
Gareth think it was, exploded and then
do you think that explosion was repossessed when the
yes. Yes, also because Gareth exploded, now the explosion is gone. Nice meeting you, Mr. Lieto.
Welcome.
Good morning. How are you?
Are you growing your dreadlocks back after cutting them? Now you're growing them back. Where's Alangmo?
No. The barber said this is the style of the young people, so that's what I I'm not used to cutting my hair. So the barber just like, okay, this is how young people look now when they cut their hair. I'm gonna cut their hair this way and then sort of like swipe them like the dreads. And I'm like, okay, I'll go with it. And when I got to campus, the students were like, "Ah, sir, you look good." I'm like, "Okay,
I'll stick with it." The students have approved. This is
yes, no.
The youth the students has approved. Approved the look.
coolest brand on campus. Thank you for coming on to chat with us. And I know you've got a whole lot of things that you want to talk about. But I actually, because you come from a mining town, I thought that we should start with the big mining story that has been developing this week, the Gold One story. And I see it was also on your list of things that you wanted to talk about. For those of you listening who don't know what this is, Gold One is a mining company out in Springs here in Johannesburg, about 50 kilometers outside of Johannesburg. And over the past couple of days, I think since Sunday, there has been what is being called a hostage situation where a whole lot of miners have been kept underground. And this is where it's being called a hostage situation by the SAPS. Yeah. Some of the miners have been brought onto the surface as of yesterday.
Yeah, about 200 or so.
But it seems that it is actually a conflict between the National Union of Mine Workers, which is the recognized union in that mine, and AMCU, which, as you will remember, became very big kind of in 2014 with the Marikana incident, is actually wanting to become the new recognized mine. Lieto, you go first because you wanted to talk about this and labor relations in mines in South Africa.
Yeah. Firstly, like I think we must give it a little historical context, right? Mining sit-ins are not actually uncommon in this country. When NUM came up, especially when it came up from the coal mines into the gold mines are typically the ones that you have not open cast mining, but you have straight down into the ground. The first time
shaft
they did
mining.
That, yeah, shaft mining. The first time they came into the gold mines, there were several sit-ins in the gold mines to demand better wages and better living conditions. Because if you remember, way back during the apartheid era, miners used to live in hostels and not at home. So there were those kind of demands that miners get to have homes and all of those things. And so there were sit-ins, especially so when a
sit-in is when the mine workers refuse at the end of their shift to come up onto the surface.
Yes. And the mine wouldn't notice for a few days, just like they did now, because because these people started the sit-in on Sunday.
Yeah.
And didn't come out. They only noticed like on Tuesday, like, wait, there's like a few 500 people missing. So because different shifts mine different parts of the shaft, right? And so you wouldn't notice if we don't come back up.
500 people so, don't come back up.
Yes. And so the problem then is, so the new up and coming unions, whenever they become desperate, they do a sit-in. And I knew something of this sort was sort of coming down the line, especially with mines that insisted on practicing the closed shop model to say, no, we only recognize NUM and we don't want to say anything to AMCU, right? And AMCU started to grow deep inroads with the miners, especially the people who work below ground. And so the supervisors, the ship supervisors, The surveyors and all of those are always NUM, but the majority of the people would be the miners that go underground. And so that was going to be the impasse. And miners have now seen Marikana and thought, well, if we stay on the surface and protest, either one of two things happen, we come and get shot, or the employer then threatens people and say, if you don't go into the mine, we don't pay you. So let's stay in the mine and see if they pay us still. Mm. And so that's the sort of mentality that goes behind it. But as well, I think it's problematic to have the closed shop, clause in our labor relations in South Africa, because it is a remnant actually that was brought by the Chamber of Mines to keep NUM out. And so the same NUM is using one of the tools. And that was the funny thing, right, that Julius always says, that the ANC is using the tools that were oppressing them to sort of charge him with crimes. And it's the same thing. The tools that were used to oppress and to keep out NUM are being used to keep out the AMCU sort of union. And everyone is sort of doesn't recognize the danger in the closed shop model, I think, in South Africa, especially when it comes to mines, and how dangerous the situation could become. Because remember, even if we're all going down into the mine, if we belong to different unions, even if I don't belong to a union and you're sitting in, my leaving is a betrayal of that cause, right? And then so the narrative can change very quickly into a sitting becoming a hostage situation.
Well,
and so
this is the thing that I kind of listening to this developing story on a couple of news networks over the past couple of days, and you're right, it's on Sunday, you know, is I kind of keep thinking, what is the difference? How do you know that the people that are sitting in down there are actually sitting in of their own volition?
Yes.
And or are being compelled to stay because of a power struggle between these two unions? And maybe, Leato, you want to explain to some of our listeners what a closed shop model is, because not everybody knows what this... we're not all from mining towns, so we may not know what a closed shop model is and what that actually how that works for the miners and the employer, as the mining houses are called.
Right. So with a closed shop model, so let's take it. We are Mine A, right? So Mine A finds itself presented with a union. Let's say it's the NUM that comes first, right? So NUM comes first and is the preferential union and is told that and presents to the mine that we represent the majority of the workers, right? Solidaritate, for instance, would come in and say, no, we don't represent the majority of the workers, but we represent a certain class of workers. So it would be the supervisors and all of those. And so we would like to be in a different negotiating bracket because our people are in a different pay model and pay market, right? So the preferential negotiating partner would be the NUM. And so AMCU comes in, they get the majority of the underground workers, for instance, to join them, right? The problem comes when it comes for wage negotiations, which probably happened 2 to 3 months ago and have been continuing. The mine then starts to negotiate with NUM, which doesn't have the lion's share of members anymore. NUM agrees like they used to. So the problem that the miners actually have with NUM was they started to get cozy with the mines. And so if Liat was sent to go and negotiate, I negotiate. During my negotiation period, I'm softened up by the mine. So I'm taken to Kaiser Chiefs matches. I'm given clothes. I'm given a car by the mine in order for me to be affable to the mining house, right? And so the next step is I get some nominal shares. So I get some shares while I agree to your wages, right? Now, in this instance, remember, AMCU is very clear about its position on wages. 12,500 or anything close to that, right? If you're inching closer to 12,500, AMCU loves you, right? And so now the agreement is given to AMCU, to NUM. They sign on behalf of AMCU members as well, and then come out of the process and say, see, if you wanted us to consider yours, you must give us your membership again and stop going to AMCU. And this is where the problem begins. The AMCU members are usually very militant, right? Because most of them are fresh upstarts from the Eastern Cape, the Free State. And so when they come into the mine, they come with the militancy of saying strike action and no negotiation, especially with NUM. Because at times, Solidariteit would come to NUM and say, since you're the preferential person and they have a difference with the employer, you take our part of the bargaining with you and tell them our supervisors want this kind of pay raise. And so we include Solidariteit's offer with NUM's offer.
And what
but they didn't do that with AMCU.
So, and what do you make of this current situation at Gold One where there is, I mean, even this morning, they were still calling it a hostage situation. And is it really a hostage situation or is AMCU taking over?
It's AMCU taking over. So remember, a lot of people then, the problem is everyone keeps saying, I heard a labor relations expert saying, well, you have to take the process that's in the courts because AMCU has taken the process to the courts. They've taken their membership numbers to the courts to be declared as the major union. The big problem is the mine doesn't want to recognize, which the law says they should. If I bring you my numbers and I bring you my memberships, you should recognize. And so it's actually the three parties are having a huge problem with each other, right? And so this situation, it's going to look like it is a sit-in because most of the miners don't want to come up, right? They want to stay there and they want their point to be put across. They want their wage negotiations to go ahead. Because if you're thinking externally, right, you're feeling the inflation as a normal employee of a company. Imagine what a miner is feeling.
We are all feeling the pain.
Cyril's right? Economy.
And the way miners would remove the pinch from themselves with the small wages that they get is working on Sunday evenings and going for the overtime.
It's
right?
Overtime.
And yes. And they do extreme overtime. They work almost double shifts almost every 4 days. And that's the safety limit that they can work. And if they're working on a Sunday, that means that they've worked their 4 days, had the mandatory 2 days of rest, and then had to go and work on Sunday. And so not coming up on Sunday evening is a way to protest to say, but even with these shifts, We're not making enough money.
Bakabantu, you wanted to add something
I wanted to ask, what does it take to be a union? Do you just need numbers? Like you're saying.
So to be a union, it's not just the numbers. You need to register. There's a huge registration period that takes about a year. And that's why in Marikana, at first, AMCU was just a name union and it wasn't registered. They were in the process of registering the union. Right. And so that's why for the most part in Marikana, they weren't recognized because they had no registration status. But now they do have the registration status. And so you can have a union, Bagabantu. And so and unionize the people at Cliff Central. The numbers aren't the problem. Right. So because you are going to be the first union there and have Pumi and three others, you are then going to be the first union and you would be the closed shop. If somebody else comes in, even though they have bigger numbers, they must prove to Cliff Central now that they have the bigger numbers. And so that becomes the struggle between the unions and no sort of multilateral negotiations happen.
I think that the additional, like...
No, I was going to say...
My current theme being it's all about the money, right? It's all about the Benjamins.
It is all about the Benjamins. And Joker's Atheist brings up a good point. You speak about a sit-in, Leah, right? But so the way the law works, if your rights infringe on mine, then your rights become moot. You can't infringe on
your
someone
rights
else's
end
rights.
Where my nose begins.
Exactly. Your right to punch ends where my nose begins. So it is a sit-in, but if 200 people escaped and they're using the word that we just escaped the shaft, then it is a hostage situation by definition.
It is a hostage situation, yes. Right? Because of, but also not just because of the way in which the mine is shaped, right? If we don't want to move from one part of the mine, there's literally one other exit which is extremely dangerous, right? And that's why the people who escaped didn't want to use that option at first. So the major way to get in and out of the mine is through the catch, so the elevator for the mine. And that's the safest way. And so if we are saying we're not going out, right? And remember, we don't all mine the same part in the shaft. We're at different parts. And so that was the difficulty that the police said tactically going in would be a problem because these people aren't in the same place. Yes. They're in different places. And so remember, in some places, there's a guy that drives like a mini train down there in the mine. Yeah. And if that guy says he's not going out and parks the train at a certain place, the majority of you might be trapped in another place and can't go past the train.
Yeah.
So it just depends on what the mechanics are underground, right? It could be just one guy who parked the mining train. Yeah. Yeah, the trolley in the wrong place. And now we're all stuck, right? And so the other exit is there, but that exit is usually one very dangerous because it's not really structured. It's susceptible to cave-ins. Only one person can pass at a time. If you're in a row, you suffer the risk of suffocating. Usually, illegal miners are hanging out around that part of the shaft and are trying to go in through that way or are putting food through that way. So it could be very dangerous. And so I think that's why they didn't want to use that option, but finally had to use it, right? Because if you're saying you're escaping and you go to the decline, that's what they call it. If you're at the decline, the people who are holding you hostage could just go and get you because you're going in 1-1 and there are 200 of you. Yeah. Right,
you know, and I think definitely one of the things that has come to my mind over the past couple of days, listening not just to this particular developing story, but also thinking about, because as it happens in South Africa, when a story of this nature comes to the fore, this is when we start having the conversations that say maybe we need to be rethinking about labor relations, you know, not just. And in this instance, you know, not just the closed mine, the closed shop experience, but also a more inclusive way of dealing with the labor market, more than just one union being represented. And it's just, for me, the thing that has come to my mind is how archaic the system is and remains at the moment, you know. So they've, all that they've done is they've just replaced one union, which only negotiated for a small strata of the employees, with one that maybe negotiates for the majority, and the majority has shifted in what they want, and they've shifted to a new union. But the fact that you're only willing to deal with one as the employer, you're only willing to deal with one union, is what is the problem here.
I think it's a huge problem. And the fact that we have no sense of multilateralism in South Africa, even in the private sector, right? Because the private sector is this bastion of efficiency. If we had multilateralism, when you negotiate, right? Because every time I've listened to mine negotiations, even when NUM was in the fore, every time Solidariteit would agree to an agreement and NUM would still be sticking out. They now look like the crazy people, right? And then now you have to, or you also have to look into what they are getting. And usually the holdout from NUM would not be for the people's wages. The wage would be stagnant and the mine would not want to budge. But we'd be holding out because of the number of shares I'm getting. And so then there's a problem. Or I haven't gotten a Mercedes, I've gotten a Toyota. Or maybe I haven't gotten the deal to transport the miners in my quantum. And so that would be the difference between the mine and the mine workers. And so the problem with AMCU now is that it's not been given the opportunity to even get to the negotiating table.
To be in the room.
Right? Mm. Exactly. Because for the most part, the problem actually with emerging unions is not that they're not at the table. The problem with emerging unions is it's still miners, right? NUM, you'd get Zwelinzima Mavavi character, somebody who's been voted for provincially, who now has a big house, who has a nice place in Johannesburg. Because one of the NUM members from Welkom had a huge house in Johannesburg, right? He had 6 cars. When he passed away, it was a huge scandal here. And everybody was like, wait, we thought he lived in Welkom. And everyone was like, no, he doesn't live here. He lives in Johannesburg. Okay. Because that's what the mine needs to give them, right? And so On the other end, the actual problem with new unions is you're going to be negotiating with miners who are actually not really astute at negotiating, who don't have the tactics locked down. They negotiate like miners. Most of them actually even need translators when it starts out. And so that process, I think, would have been such a great basis to build a solid basis for starting new ways of negotiating. Because the way we're negotiating now is the same way we negotiated almost 50 to 60 years ago. And so that, for me, is so, so bad in a South Africa that we're saying is growing. But it's not actually growing at all in the way we're thinking about making this country better and the new ways we could make it better.
Okay, so devil's advocate, Mr. Leeta, right? Not everyone can get a seat at the table. Unfortunately, not everyone's voice does matter. The majority does rule. Yes, the majority can shift, says Pumi. So the NUM workers now go to AMCU, right? Because AMCU represents their needs and NUM has sold out. So, but what about the end goal here? Because if you're going to drive the business out, everyone loses. Because
right. The
way I'm looking at it from a business point of view, it's not, if you're not mining for me, then it's not profitable. So then I can shut down shop. Then what happens?
So
what happens to the economy? Because, so just a slight comment that you had, what you said, private sector is a bastion. It is, because it is the only effective tool that we have shown that can build an economy. Communism hasn't. Capitalism and the free market has shown, whether we like it or not, and there is a place for unions and regulation and whatnot and workers' rights, but at the end of the day, make money, then everyone benefits. A rising tide lifts all boats.
Right. So let me sort of first push back on the not everyone can make it to the table. Because strangely enough, the mine actually said to AMCU workers, while we're waiting for you to become the major union, workers can individually come to the table and negotiate their wages.
Okay.
So actually, everyone can come to the table. The mine just refuses for everyone to come to the table in the way that they choose is best represents them. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem, right? And so that's what I'm saying. It's not about the private sector not being a bastion of the economy. It's being a bastion of efficiency. Because this is just an efficiency issue. Which is the most efficient option? To get everyone to negotiate at the same time?
No.
Or
the most efficient option is divide and conquer, which is what they do.
Okay.
That's not efficient.
That is exactly. System.
Because
the business point of view, if you break up the union, you can wring out more work from the workers. Break up the majority, like, what's bigger, one or five? One is bigger.
Right, listen. But now what you're saying is, if you break up the majority,
yes.
Right? But the problem is, the majority is not willing to work. And the people that you are left with are not the people who actually go to the rock face and try to get the gold out. Mm. And that's why that's why AMCU's holdout now is so significant. Is that those people are the ones who you depend to get your product, right? The fancy pants people are the ones who escape. They're useless to the mine. With their escape, they can't be used in another shift. That's the problem, right? And so here's the issue, right? Let's talk about the economy and the company.
Mm.
Actually, mines in South Africa are very, that's why I'm saying they're very efficient when it comes to a lot of things, right? The Chamber of Mines, actually, when you go to be a shareholder, when the mine is in development, you are told that we account for a strike season. There's going to be a time where we're going to piss off the miners and they're going to stop mining. Your profits are going to not be affected. You know why? Immediately after a strike, so a mine has daily targets, right? And literally, some workers would not even come. The mine would refuse for workers to come out before they hit their target.
No.
So the cash would not go down to go and get them if the target is not hit, right? And so the targets go up after strike season. And so you work longer hours after strike season. You work more overtime after strike season. And actually, safety conditions are actually harsher. Yeah. It's more dangerous to go mine after strike season. And so the efficiency is amazing. There's no shareholder of a mine that has ever said, oh no, the miners are striking, my profits have gone lower. Their profits are always consistent. They are always the same, whether or not mining stops for even 6 to 7 months. So they don't care.
You know, the one thing that you're raising is about the fact that it's still an old way of doing things. Mm. And that today they still do things the way that they were done 50, 60 years ago, which for me is an interesting thing with a little, I want to do a slight pivot to something else that you raised in the stuff that you wanted to talk about. Speaking of doing the same thing over and over again, is you wanted to talk about the government in Mbizos. We're seeing it a lot here in Johannesburg. We're seeing it a lot here in Gauteng, because we have an incredibly active premier in Banyaza Lusufi, who is running all sorts of schemes. And you can just see that it's because we are in, you know, we're in voting season. And so you wanted to talk about these ANC Mbizos that are masked as government activity, Leto.
It's actually totally disgusting to me, right? Because if you look at it, so the ANC has no manifesto ideas. This is the funniest part about the elections that are coming up. The ANC is actually not presenting a new manifesto. What they're saying is they're presenting a manifesto review, right? They're putting out NEC members and the newly elected Youth League members. The NEC members, the provincial heads, and the president are going around and are doing the same thing. This is the best we've done for you in the manifesto. This is the rest of the manifesto that we couldn't deliver. We're going to deliver that next. It's like a series. Like we're saying, ah, no, next time on Dragon Ball Z, we're going to to deliver this. Right?
Yeah.
So my biggest problem then is, if you look at the ANC posters for the NEC members, and the government posters for the Mbizos look exactly the same. And the sitting arrangement is actually very similar. So when the president is standing there, it's all the parliamentarians sitting in their ANC regalia, not government regalia. So you find Angie Motshekga sitting there with her Women's League regalia without a badge. They're very smart about doing that. But you can clearly see that this is an ANC rally, right? And what they're doing is they're no longer going to the areas that embarrassed them before. So remember, Cyril did this before and came back with egg on his face. He went to the Northwest, he came to the Free State and went to Kroonstad, and
went to the Northern Cape.
Yeah. He went to places where people really have no hope, right? If you go to Kroonstad, people have to travel from Kroonstad to Welkom to come to work. So almost an hour travel just to get to work, because in Kroonstad there's no jobs. And he went there thinking, he said, no, there's a veteran, we're going to place a headstone. And people told him to leave. And so he's no longer going back to those places. He's now going and showing off a dam in Potchefstroom that might come to work in a year and a half. And so when you do that, for me, it's so insidious, because the people in this country are tired of the show and tell. But most of the people can't tell that they're being taken to a horse and pony show. And
I think the people can tell. I think the people are tired. I think the people are tired of the fact that this is you just trot out the same stuff every now and again. And I think the people can see through that.
No. The people are tired, but the people can't put on a finger on what the deception is. Because I ask people, are you tired of this? They say yes. And I say, what is it that you're really tired of? What are they doing that's so wrong? And they can't put their finger on, this is actually deception, right? Because here where I live, in this joke of a town, it was actually on the news, national news, that 75 of our municipal vehicles have been attached, including dump trucks and all of these things. And the mayor goes to other towns to go borrow cars, right? And then, funny enough, during the news broadcast, they waited for them to go live so that a dump truck can drive past and stage. It's so comical. I hate it. And so the problem is, remember, even when Cyril did it the first time, the people could speak to the officials and give them their voice. Now they're doing the king thing, right? So the mayors are the de facto chiefs. The mayor here in my town.
This is a strategy, but this is a strategy. Are they not on strategy to be doing exactly this? This is the strategy of the ANC. We have been in government and we have delivered these things. This is a political strategy. Yes. They're trying to stay in power.
Yes.
But, you know, how many other political strategies could you employ, right?
But it's the exact same strategy. It is the exact same strategy that we are seeing in the Western Cape, where the DA strategy is to say, we govern better. Look what we have done here. Bring us to your town. We can do it in your town too. It's a political strategy.
Yes, but the DA is not fashioning its... So there's a big divide between the DA, the party, and the DA, the governance. Right? And you can see that divide. My problem is where the ANC starts to blur the line is where our money starts to bleed into the ANC campaigns and secretly move between the two. They use the same people to make the posters. The posters look exactly the same. They use the same shirts. The shirts look exact. And so the problem is the grubby hands of the ANC. Right? They can't keep their hands to themselves and to their own money. And my concern is, as always with their political strategy, they start to use the public coffers and start to magically make things disappear.
But Mr. Lieto, this is the problem with elections in South Africa. We don't vote for people. We vote for the ANC. We vote for parties. So wouldn't you say that the ANC is in fact the government, as even though we call them something else, but they are the government. The highest seat of the land is not the Union Buildings. It is Luthuli House. So that's what we are seeing. But you are complaining that it only applies when it comes to the money.
No. What I'm saying is even if the seat of power is Luthuli House, right, in the country, the sneaky ways in which they do things, right, it's slimy, it's dishonest almost. So, look, I don't mind you campaigning, right, because what the Youth League is doing is actually putting out fires internally in the ANC. Mm. They're calling internal imbeciles, they're calling them gatherings of cadres or something strange like that, right? And they're trying to put out fires internally because there's so much strife inside the ANC that these new faces are being put forward to go and try and quell the fires and bring unity again, right? I don't care about that. That's fine. It's a strategy of theirs to keep their membership voting, right? It's internal. And they could have done the same thing and extended it, that we have new faces, we're going to bring new hope or something of that sort. But what they do is they make this thin line between them and the NEC members where they could now start to share resources. And because we can't audit all of them all of the time, they probably are sharing resources and taking government money and giving it to the ANC.
We were talking in the last hour about marketing and about how marketing works. And we're talking about Lyft. I don't know if you heard this. And they are the billboard in the sky, as it were. The ANC is doing the exact same thing. They are marketing themselves ahead of an election. Mm. And the only way they have to market themselves ahead of this election is to say, this is what we've done when we were in power. Yeah. It is, and all I'm saying to you is that it is the exact same strategy that we are seeing in the Western Cape. Why is it a problem for you that it's the ANC and it is not a problem for you in another party?
Yes. You're not understanding me. The money flows. So when Lyft does the billboard in the sky, whatever it is, right? It doesn't sneakily take money from another rideshare company and say and mask it as their own money, right? Which is the problem that the ANC always does.
They're taking Disney money. But what I want to talk about is what you believe the political strategies should be then. What is the political strategy going forward? Especially because we see so many new parties coming into the play, right? So we see Action SA, we see Busa with...
ACT.
What should the political strategy be?
I think if we want a new outcome in this country, right? Even with the ANC, if they want a new kind of ANC that's renewed, we need new strategies. Because all of these people go to the same strategist, eh? I'm connected with young people from all of these parties. You know, guys, you laugh, right? But one of the guys from the new parties told me outright that, oh, no, the Free State and Northern Cape for us aren't priority provinces. We don't care whether we win or lose them.
Oh, wow.
Yet they're going to contest a national election, right? I asked an EFF member this. He said the same thing. I asked a DA member this, who was in the Free State and is now in Parliament. And she said the same thing. We're not looking to win the Free State. We're not looking to win the Northern Cape, right? And so if everyone's political strategy is Free State, Northern Cape, not a priority.
But that's not where the numbers are. To win election, you need numbers. Mm. The numbers are not in the Northern Cape. The numbers are in KZN. The numbers are in the Western Cape. And the numbers are in Gauteng. So it makes no sense you've got a little bit of budget to try and go for those places too. Even in a national election, you go for where the numbers are.
But remember what South African politics are when it comes to voting. It's a game of makeup. You're trying to make up the numbers, right? That the because that's what coalition is make up the numbers that the ANC has and see if we can't push them out. So if the makeup isn't looking the same, if nobody's saying go to these two provinces, because Raisa Mzansi actually went to the Northern Cape and did one stint, and then they did a 360 about them not being a priority province, because they got there and people were hungry for a new party to be involved, and they looked and they said, well, this place looks like it's fertile ground to plant something. Yes, we might not win the election with them, but if we plant something now, the next time we're doing elections, they would recognize us. But because they go to the same political strategist and do the same old political strategies, and then next year, like crazy people, we're expecting a different result, right? We're expecting somehow that there's going to be a large shift in Johannesburg, that 8 million people are going to suddenly move from the ANC and suddenly flood into the other parties, which is, like I said, it's a game of makeup, right? Where do we make up these people that the ANC seem to have a grip on? Maybe we could steal in Johannesburg, we could steal 2 million people from them, let's assume, right? And it's not only the EFF stealing the 2 million people, they're divided amongst all the other parties, right? Where do we make up the rest? And so my problem is, in South Africa, we seem to be locked in our ways in every sector. If one thing has been working since apartheid, this is our thing. Even though apartheid is dead, right?
Apartheid's fault.
No. It's not even apartheid's fault. Like, yeah. It worked in 94 for the ANC. So all elections are 94. And so that's the big problem for me.
But 2024 is our 1994.
Yeah.
Oh, woman, please stop saying that. I hate it so much.
Mr. Leto,
just hate it. This is their slogan.
Yes.
This is their slogan.
That's the worst slogan. It's not 1994, right? It's worse than 1994. This is our most desperate time. If the ANC makes it into office in 2024, if it's 1994, because in 1994, what was the result? The ANC won.
Yes.
Stop saying it's 1994. Say something else. Say it's the new 1994.
Talk about to you. Wanted to add something.
No, I just wanted to see if Mr. Leto saw this one. This big shift. This big shift in political spheres and political power.
Is it a big shift? Do you think it is a big shift, Bagabantu?
I don't know if she has a constituency. I don't think it is a shift. But it's more political theater than anything else.
Yep.
Also, she released a statement that only the EFF can end load shedding in South Africa. So I think that is powerful, right? From the person who saw the books, thinks that the EFF can end load shedding in South Africa.
Mm. So, and I saw there's a headline that there is another famous person that will be joining the EFF. I'm not sure if they will be joining the EFF, because I also saw a video that had one of the big DJs from Ukhozi FM in KZN talking at an EFF rally, and I wondered if that's the big name that they were bringing across. Do you think this makes a difference, Leto? These big names that are coming onto the EFF. I mean, they recently brought Jimmy Manye, They have now brought Busisiwe Mkhwebane. They're really making an effort to bring in some of these faces that we're used to seeing. Busisiwe was not non-aligned at the time because that's the job that she was in, needed her to be non-aligned. Do you think that these big names are going to make a difference? Is this part of the political strategy for the EFF?
Yes, it's to soften the crust that is Julius Malema, right?
Soften the crust.
On the wound of South Africa. Because think about it. Even though we sort of at times sort of love Julius, he hits the right notes at times, but he's so crass about doing it, right? The way, so we might love his results, we might even love his ideas, but the way in which he puts those ideas forward needs a Ringo to be standing next to him so that we remember he's still South African, right? He needs the soft faces around him, because really nobody politically cares about Jimmy Mani. Nobody has cared about Jimmy Mani politically for years, right? No. When he was in Welkom, so let me tell you the story of Jimmy Mani. Jimmy Mani used to be a miner in Welkom, and he wasn't Zwanele then because he was heading up the union.
Yes,
that's how he got his nice house in Johannesburg. That's how he started to go to Johannesburg.
Is he the one?
He was the one that got the nice house.
Oh no, the one with the nice house.
No.
The one with the nice house.
Yeah, he passed away. He started. He started the foundation for nice houses in Johannesburg. Yeah, he insisted on the miners once he was elected into NUM. He insisted on being called Jimmy because the white people needed to know him with his English name. So I'm going to call him Jimmy for the rest of my life as a Welkom citizen. It's his name from here. That's how we know him. He's one Mzwanele. He's Mzwanele now that African names are popular.
Yes. Rebrandile umntana bantu. Yes, so you're saying nobody cares, but these faces are meant to soften the crust on the wound, you say?
Yes, because remember, and Busisiwe Mkhwebane, even though she's got her scandals, falls under the we are bringing in the academics,
yes,
kind of
that's
mindset.
That's what it looked
right?
like to me too.
Yeah. She's got her law degrees, and she looks like part of the thing that they're trying to build, this sort of like a conglomerate of people who are graduating and upwardly mobile and sort of the smart black evolved to EFF. And that's sort of the strategy that they're putting forward, because Malema alone, I don't think, gets them the votes that puts them over the hump. But him with a softened view and the kinds of people around him might get him across as somebody who's seeming to be accepting of different views, right? And it doesn't also look like he's trying to also not look like Bantu Holomisa and Teralekot at the same time.
Because you say that simultaneously, the news of, I think it's almost 65 councillors and members of parliament who were expelled because they were not able to bring the buses to Joburg.
I wanted to ask about
this. This is at the same time, you know. And there was also another video of Ungizwe Mchunu, him of Azikhale, lambasting, basically, Julius Malema for that decision.
But
which makes him a dictator.
No. If you're going into the EFF, you expect such things, right? Because
expelled for not bringing a bus, Aibo.
Do you know how much they charge the parliamentarians that they have to contribute?
Please take. I saw a breakdown of how much they. Because
I think it's almost 30% of their salary that they have to put back into the EFF.
And this is buy buggies. And they have to buy a buggy to serve their community.
And this is including the councillors, by the way. It's not just parliamentarians. Every office holder of the EFF has to give like a large amount to the EFF, right? And so you're expecting something stupid like that to happen. And the way Julius masks it is this. You have to be in tune with your community. It's not your money. You don't have to put out money yourself. But if you are an EFF member, if you're truly EFF, you'll go and source funds because we're tough like that. Because that's what he's trying to build. That's the brand. So EFF built tough can sort of fundraise anywhere and anywhere with anyone. And so if you fundraise, we'll allow you to do it, right? And that's my big, and that's the sort of crass part of Julius Malema. But he also has to do that because right now, the EFF also has no time for freeloaders. It has no time for people who are standing still. It has no time for comfortable people like in the ANC. An ANC member, you looked at that parliament when they were voting for the new public protector, and you were going, who? All over the screen, I'm going, who is this? Who's the person standing and shouting? Who's this? Because I was telling, guys, you don't understand how.
There are 400 people in parliament. There are 400 people in parliament.
Of the 400, I haven't seen 200 of them. I haven't seen them. It was the first time I saw them on that day, screaming and shouting like killed kids in a kindergarten, right? And so my problem is, you've never even seen those people, but they are there, and the ANC accepts that they're there, right? They might be there because they know somebody, they're a friend of somebody, somebody's my uncle, and now I'm in parliament. The biggest problem with the EFF is they can't afford any of those, because if you at any time get any of those freeloaders who don't fundraise for you, don't bring the buses, then there are a few less faces in the crowd of the EFF, right? The red sea that we're always seeing. And so FNB Stadium is not filled up for Julius Malema to raise his fist on the podium. And so the optics then don't look like what they should. And I get it, but still, his sort of crass nature needs a softening blow. And I think that's the only way for him to go over well with the voter base. Because even the young people don't like some of the things that he does.
I don't understand why there is so much outrage on the fact that the EFF expects its deployees, members of parliament and councillors, to put in a certain amount of their salary back into the EFF, when at the very same time there is an expectation of DA members to bring in a certain amount of fundraising. There is the same expectation of Action SA members. I mean, we saw this on the news with Herman Mashaba and what some of those individuals who want to stand for positions within the party, how much they have to bring in terms of fundraising. So why the outrage for Julius when he says, we're going to send you to parliament or we're going to send you to be in the council and you must bring in some of this money back into the party? The party needs funds to run. Yes.
Plow back, yes.
Yeah.
No. You are plowing back, right? That's fine. I get the plowing back. Everyone does it. That's the standard in South Africa. On top of me plowing back, Pumi, I might now bring a bus full of people from Welcome.
Yes.
How many people from Welcome?
Those are the people that are going to vote for you.
Yes.
If you cannot convince people in Welcome, where you are from, to get on a bus and come and support the party at a stadium, right? How are you going to get those people to go and vote for you on a ballot?
3,000 Amabuntu got on a bus and went to Pretoria to support their king.
Hey, when I asked Name, I wanted to.
They were king.
They're king. They're king. So if you can't support the person you voted for, then what are you doing? What have you done for me lately? Also, you did touch on something. He is a dictator, says Pumi, in the sense that he is the commander in chief. Lest we not forget the
it's
language.
It's his party.
It's his party, exactly. So he has a right to set the laws the way he wants to.
Yes.
This man does not stylize himself as president. He's a commander in chief. There's a reason why that language and that verbiage is used.
In South African politics, there are two people you don't want to look like. You don't want to look like Bantu Holomisa. You don't want to look like Tera Likota. That's true.
Mr. Lee,
you don't want to look like Bantu Holomisa.
Musiwa Likota.
No. He's from Kronstadt. In Kronstadt, he said he was Terra. The one that, if you come from Free State and you give us your name, that's your name. Don't tell us you are Musiwa there when you are suddenly in parliament.
Okay, you have to elaborate on that. That these are two people. There are people, I can tell you for free, there are people here in our listener, in the comments, who don't even know who Bantu Holomisa is. You say you don't want to look like Bantu Holomisa. What
like
does
the,
that
you
mean?
You don't want to look like a general.
How?
Remember, Bantu Holomisa, right? Bantu Holomisa, he was the prodigy. Mm. He was the one lauded by Nelson Mandela to be the next big thing. And it looks like in his politics, he's still trying to be the next big thing that Mandela ordained, right? And even how he handles his party, you don't know anyone else. You know, it's him and that Khosa guy. They're the only people from the UDM that you know. You've never seen anyone. You've never seen a UDM rally. You've never seen a UDM shirt. You've never seen a UDM anything. It's just
yet they are represented in parliament.
Yes.
Yes. But then they're represented and their growth is stunted like a child who.
So just to refine your argument that you made here, Mr. Lieto, about the political strategy and how it is so archaic in South Africa. I've listened to the language that we've talked about on the show. We are talking about stealing votes from the ANC. This is how most political parties speak. This is how the DA speaks. We're going to take votes from... What about the free votes, the people that are disenfranchised with the voting system, the disenfranchised with government, the people who don't know about voting, don't know about how participation and all these things, because it doesn't matter if you take votes away from the ANC. We're talking about taking votes away from the ANC. The EFF might steal 2 million. Why are they not creating new voters? Why is that not the political strategy? Why are we not empowering new people?
The voters who are gone aren't coming back.
But they are new voters.
They are new voters. My sister just turned 18. She's going to vote in the next election.
You are shaking your head vigorously for those who can't see you. Why are you shaking your head like that? Talk to me about on-campus voters.
I'll tell you a secret. I teach them every day. They do not care. They, like, very simply, campus participation with campus voting has gone down so significantly that campuses have stopped inviting the IEC to come and conduct the elections. They just do it online now. That's how bad it's become. There's no large voter base. The SRC in most campuses is not even voted for by 10% of the population of students. Literally, if your member is wearing a shirt, they're gonna go vote for you. All other students don't care. Mm. And so the generation that's coming, the new voters, even the voters who haven't been voting, those people aren't coming back because they aren't impressed. And our political parties aren't even looking to impress them. The only person who's talking about them is Musi Maimane, and we don't actually know what Musi is doing with his party.
Yeah, we don't.
So that's the big problem. The only person who's talking about those people is Musi, and nobody knows what Musi is doing. And so when we're talking the next election, these elections are almost, they're here. In political terms, it's 6 days away. And so you don't have time to get new converts to your cult of personality called a South African party, because that's what that's what South African parties are. Nobody's going to love Herman in the next 3 months. If you don't already love him, nobody's going to love him.
So what do you, because you teach them every day, Lieto, you have an insight that maybe most of us don't have. What do you think political parties should be saying or doing to excite those young people?
And I've always been saying this. South African parties are really bad at mapping out the future, right? They're bad at saying, so they're saying, let's push out the ANC next year. But they're very bad at saying, what does it look like after the ANC, right? Because even if the DA says it will look like the Western Cape, if I'm black, I'm looking at it and going, Western Cape looks good in town, but Khayelitsha, where I'm from, still looks the same. So the big problem is they're bad at mapping out. And one thing the ANC has done that's excellent is they'll map it out for you. They'll tell you that the 350 will probably be 650 next time. The grant might be more. They're good at mapping out, even with their mistakes, they're good with mapping out what the mistake doesn't look like, right? They'll tell you that the mayor was bad. It's a comrade who wasn't listening to the through the eye of the needle. He didn't read. And they tell you what the problem is and what it looks like post the problem. They're very bad at applying those things, but they're very good at mapping them out. No party in South Africa, when you give them airtime on these hour-long podcasts, none of them come and say, after you put in action essay, this is what it looks like. This is the first step, because these young people that I teach every day are more nervous about their futures than anything else. They are very jittery about it. They don't know where they land. They don't even know where they are now. They are positioned now. So most of the parties can't even tell them where young people are positioned in South Africa in order to take us forward. They can't tell us as a young person, this is where you are. This is where you think you are most useful, and this is what you might do. So if somebody comes in and says, we're going to do a youth service program. And not the yes thing, that stupid thing that Cyril does. We're going to do a simple youth program where you go into a government position. You are going to be a policeman. Even if you've graduated from university, you're going to be a nurse. You're going to be an administrator in a hospital. You are going to have a year of service in the army anywhere. And this year of service, you'll then decide what to do afterward. The young people will then know, if when I come out of this university, or even if I'm in a township, if I take this step, I land in the army. If I take this step, I land in the police force and contribute. And then after that, I will plot my way, right? But you don't tell them this, and so they don't care. They're not invested in your program because it sounds like your program doesn't include them. They're not on social grants. They don't want to be on social grants. They're not part of the people that you're trying to give 350s to. And so they fall into this sort of like, the nice term that they were using during the Peace Must Fall protest was the missing middle. The young people in this election, the new voters, are the missing middle. We have no way to classify them. We have no way to promise them anything, and we don't have any mechanism of bringing them closer to us. They don't care.
You get the last word. Is Leto right? Is this how young people are feeling? Is this how you are feeling going into the election next year?
So I've only voted in one election because of how my birthday is structured. It's ended at the end of the year. So I've only voted in one election. I've never understood my fellow youth and my friend to what Mr. Leto is saying about mapping out. He did say that if we don't vote next year, and it struck a chord with me, is that these are the problems that we will face. Like Uti, it's a mere selfish decision that you need to take. It's not for the greater good of the country. He needs to vote for something that speaks to him, because to solve a future problem that he knows he will have. So if it means your future problem is xenophobia, vote for Action SA. If your future problem is the Land Act and you want the land back, vote for the EFF. But you need to take a stand. I think at this point, you just need to have a voice. We don't have like you're saying, the election is right here. No one is speaking, but I think you need to participate, people.
I think that's a good place to stop. Leto, thank you for coming on. It's quite a lot of stuff that we spoke about. Spoke about mining, spoke about voters, spoke about young people, spoke about political mapping. I like that the young people going into the next election are the missing middle. And maybe we need to consider how we get those young people more interested. Thank you to everybody in the comments. Everybody, I see what you're saying. Patricia Vinelli, Carl Dos Santos, Sanele, everybody in the comments, please pass this podcast to everybody. If you haven't already, you've got little 30 seconds. Like and subscribe to the podcast. Thank you for joining us. I'll see you next week on The Burning Platform. Thanks, Leto, for coming.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Thank you for keeping me company, Bakabantu. It was always wonderful to have you here. CliffCentral.com